like to read from a book called Little Failure, a memoir of the American novelist Gary Schiechengart, who this was released in 2014. And although I haven't read any of Gary's novels, I came across this autobiography in my local library, and after reading the back cover, I was drawn to it because he was somebody who moved to America early on in his life from his mother nation of Russia. His parents were half Russian and half Jewish, so it's quite interesting. Quite an interesting story, and he tells it very well. And here is a little bit from the fourth chapter called Moscow Square. We live on Tipanov Street, house 5, apartment 10. A sign at the mouth of the street informs us that Alexander Fyodorovich Tipanov, 1924 to 1944, was a brave defender of the city of Lenin. In 1944, he shielded his troops with his breast against advancing fire, allowing his comrades a successful charge forward. The fearless warrior was posthumously awarded the title Hero of the Soviet Union. I like to think that my grandfather Isaac, my father's father, who also died in the war at a ridiculously young age, performed a similar feat, even if it wasn't a hero of the Soviet Union. Oh, how I would love to put my own breast in front of some artillery fire so that my comrades could charge forward and kill Germans. But first, I'll have to make a friend or two of my own age, and that equally heroic feat is still years away. As my father carries me from the hide-and-seek spruces of the Lenin statue to Tipanov Street, house 5, apartment 10, we pass the other important institution in my life, the pharmacy. One of the most frightening words in the Russian language is banki, which nominally refers to the plural of a glass or jar, which the Oxford Russian English Dictionary also helpfully describes as med, cupping glass. I'm not sure about the med part, because I've yet to meet any sufferer of asthma, pneumonia, or any other bronchial disaster that this insane form of peasant remedy has ever cured. The local pharmacy carries a few useful medicines, but the least useful of them is banki. The application of said cupping glass to the soft white back of a wheezing Leningrad boy in 1976 represents the culmination of 3,000 years of not-so-great medical intervention, beginning with the traditional practices of the Greeks and the Chinese, and ending here at the pharmacy on Tipanov Street. This is what I remember all too well. I'm lying on my stomach. The banki are produced. They are little glass jars, greenish in tint, each probably the size of my charred foot. My entire back is rubbed with Vaseline by my mother's strong hand. What follows is frightening beyond words for any sane adult, let alone an anxious child. A pair of tweezers wrapped in cotton is soaked in vodka or rubbing alcohol and set on fire. The flaming pincers are struck into each glass cup, sucking out the air to create suction between the cup and the skin. The cups are then clamped along the length of the patient's back, supposedly to pull the mucus away from the lungs, but in reality to scare the little boy into thinking his parents are raving pyromaniacs with serious intent to hurt. Let me close my eyes now. I'm hearing now a long match struck against the matchbox by my mother. Then the flames of the pincers, as orange and yellow, as polluted Leningrad sunset. Then the whoosh of air being sucked out as if by a neutron bomb, just like the one the American imperialists are threatening on television to use against us. Then the sting of the warm glass against my back. And then 10 minutes of lying as still as a dead October leaf at the bottom of a pool, lest the banki pop off my tortured back and the whole procedure is to be repeated again. The first step of our multi-part emigration to America will involve a week-long stop in Vienna before we move on to Rome and finally New York. I will be 6 years old and breathless from asthma, per the usual, and will have to be taken to a Viennese medical clinic. Her doctor will take one look at my black and blue bruised back and prepare to call the Austrian police forces with a fresh report of child abuse. After my parents nervously explain it was merely cupping, he will laugh and say, "How old-fashioned," or "How idiotic," or "You crazy Russians, what will you do next, huh?" He will give me something I never encountered back in the USSR, a simple steroid-fueled asthma inhaler. For the first time in my life, I will enjoy the realisation that I do not have to choke to death every night. But right now, there is no such solace, and both my father and I know that the fun we just had running along the spruces beneath the Lenin in Moscow Square will exact a price. Tonight I'll be sick. In fact, I know even as we walk past the pharmacy with its bold sign, I am already instructing my lungs to shut down. And another thing we do not realise in 1979, asthma is, at least in part, what they call an emotional disease triggered by stress and fear. But fear of what? Sweaty me is carried into the warm, cabbagey apartment and my mother is screaming at my father. "How could you stay out so late? How could you let him run in the cold? He's overheated. Now he'll be sick." And he starts screaming back at her. She knows everything. A fucking doctor she is. "Don't swear. The child is here." And then to me, "Don't repeat our cursing. You're the one who swears." "Me? You know what? Go to the dick. Fuck your mother." I record and mispronounce the bad words inside myself. My mother loses her Russianness and retreats into the primordial Yiddish of her late grandmother from the Belarusian shtetl of Dubrovno. A bitter misfortune. My breathing grows shallow. What language will they sink to next? Aramaic? I take off my pyjamas and dutifully lie down on my stomach, my parents still screaming at me, at each other in two languages. Prepare the cupping kit, getting and rubbing alcohol ready to feed the flames. A mere decade later, I will find a new space to fill with alcohol. And so I am cupped. After cupping, I cannot sleep. My back is covered in circular welts and the asthma has only been exacerbated. I am on the living room couch that serves as my bed, wheezing. I pick up an illustrated children's book about a young boy and girl who are, for reasons that now escape me, shrunk down to miniature size and then attacked by a swarm of gigantic mosquitoes. On one of the pages of the book, a spot of jam has coagulated to form what looks like the crushed remains of a particularly vile insect. In swampy Leningrad, the mosquitoes are the size of Lenin's. A sleepless, suffering child exists in a kind of fourth dimension where language runs unbidden through the tiny but growing mind, and the external senses are primed to receive a flood of information. Hence, fictional mosquito, coagulated jam, vile insect, the heavy embrace of the sagging couch, patterns of the wall rug hanging above it forming real Arabic numbers and unreal Tibetan words. I have recently visited the Museum of Ethnography. Mama and Papa are in the next room sleeping after their latest fight, oblivious to all the action inside my head. The northern sun clambers atop its perch with what can only be described as resignation, radiating pink across the tops of birches and the heavy architecture, a pink that to the sleepless young eye is filled with ribbons of life, amoeba shapes that float and swirl across the landscape and beyond it, a fifth dimension to the already busy fourth one I have described above. And to my old man's wheezing is added amazement. I have been cupped, true, but I have lived through another night. The sagging couch, which I have long ago rechristened the Imperial Snotty, an 18th century Russian frigate just like the one that lives in the nearby museum of the Battle of Chesme, formerly the Chesme Church, where Papa and I like to launch our toy helicopters among the church spires, has made its way through the foggy night. The pressure of falling asleep has lifted. There is nothing to fear and nothing worth struggling for, and with that easing of expectation comes the unexpected. I fall asleep in the morning, the city bright and alive around me. Lenin, with his outstretched hand, greeting the school children in their uniforms, the workers and soldiers and sailors in theirs. Outside the window, two neon signs gently flicker on as I rumble into sleep. "Meat," one of them says, and then "produce."